Hi, I'm Dr. K. I'm a psychologist at the Jagiellonian University, and I'd like to welcome to the Ab Ovo podcast. Join me as we explore psychology from the ground up, delving into its scientific and practical aspects, from therapy to everyday well-being. So let's unravel the mysteries of the mind together. Let's begin. So are we all bad? It's a question as old as the hills. And I'm not going to answer the question today, but I want to tell you about one of the most famous and at the same time one of the worst experiments in the history of psychology. The story begins in 1971 in the basement of Stanford University, where a young psychologist named Philip Zimbardo, amazed by his friend Stanley Milgram's experiment, decided to expand on the phenomenon of evil, or to name it in a more professional manner, phenomenon of good people behaving bad. In 1961, so 10 years before the Stanford experiment, Stanley Milgram carried out a series of experiments on obedience and the impact of authority on human behavior. So he informed study participants they were participating in a scientific study on memory and learning. And participants were assigned the role of a teacher, while a person in another room was assigned the role of a learner. Milgram placed participants in a room with the actual researcher, and the participants read a list of words, and the learner was supposed to repeat them. The person repeating the words was in fact another researcher, but the study participants were not aware of it. So every time a learner made a mistake, the teacher or study participant who took the role of a teacher was supposed to punish them by administering an electric shock. And the voltage ranged between slight shock to severe, dangerous shock. And the final buttons were just described as X, X, and X. And with an increasing electric shock, a learner reacted by complaining, screaming, pleading to stop, and finally the learner stopped reacting. The teacher were not aware of what's going on with the learner because they didn't see each other. The teacher could just hear if a learner repeat the words correctly or not. And every time a teacher wanted to stop the experiment, the researcher, who was still in the room, instructed them to go on. And you can believe it or not, but 65% of the study participants delivered the maximum shock. So simply meaning they administered a deadly electric shock to a learner because the learner made mistakes. Well, Philip Zimbardo was fascinated by these findings and wondered if it's possible that a situation or authority make people bad. So in other words, can the most disgusting human behavior be explained with a simple because they had to, or because they were forced to do so? So you must know that at the time when both experiments were carried out, scientists and societies in general were wondering how it was possible that Nazis were doing so many horrible things to other people. And if it's a matter of human nature, so anybody would do it if they only had an opportunity, or if it's a matter of obedience, so if someone in a superior position tells us to do something, even if it's if we deeply disagree, we would do it anyway. To do so, in the basement of Stanford Jordan Hall, Philip Zimbardo built a prison to conduct his experiment. The miniature prison cells were arranged to accommodate three prisoners in each, and the setups included a narrow corridor, a confined space for solitary confinement, and the larger area opposite the prisoners allocated for the guards and warden. Participants were recruited via newspapers, and the ad stated that male college students were needed for psychological study of a prison life. They were promised to be rewarded $15 per day for 1 or 2 weeks, beginning in August. And 75 men applied for the research, and those with medical problems or mental issues or criminal backgrounds were initially excluded, and the final sample comprised 25 middle-class and healthy men. And some participants were assigned to be guards, while the rest of participants were assigned to be the prisoners. And the experiment was designed in a quite realistic way. So participants who were assigned to be the prisoners were mock arrested at their homes on the morning of August 15th. And the study participants were not previously informed about the exact design of the experiment, so none of them actually expected to be arrested. Also, the Palo Alto Police Department agreed to assist the research team, so the whole procedure looked very genuine. Miranda rights were presented to study participants, and police officers took their fingerprints and took mugshots. So the arrest was filmed by the San Francisco TV station, so all the more looked realistic. And the prisoners were taken from the police station to the Stanford Mock Prison, where they were strip searched and gathered identifying numbers. And the prisoners' clothes were taken away by the guards. And instead of their own clothes, they were given prison suits, uncomfortable, ill-fitting, and worn without any underwear. And to dehumanize prisoners even more, from now on they were forbidden to use their names, and also the prison guards were instructed to use the ID number instead of their names. And after presenting the rules of the prison, inmates were sent to their cells for the rest of the first day of experiment. Over the course of the night, the guards used whistles and banged their batons to interrupt sleep. So around 2 in the morning, prisoners rebelled against the guards and refused to leave their cells at breakfast time. So the guards, in turn, used the fire extinguishers to reassert control. The guards also took the prisoners' mattresses and clothes, and 3 of them were sent to the isolation room and were considered dangerous inmates. And you must know that the guards were allowed to use their power and abuse prisoners, so they forced prisoners to do push-ups. They also limited access to the restroom, so the prisoners had to use buckets instead. And on the third day, the first breakdown occurred. So the prisoner number 8612, whose real name was Douglas Corpy, was released from prison. Over this day, he started screaming that he wouldn't stand this anymore, and he was burning up inside. So, Philip Zimbardo, he was the main researcher and main designer of the experiment, had a conversation with prisoner 8612 and decided to release him from prison. After being released and after a few years, Corpy revealed that he faked the mental breakdown. And Philip Zimbardo asked about his situation. He claimed that he was obliged to treat every symptom of breakdown seriously, so he couldn't risk the health of any prisoner, so he made up his mind to free Douglas Corpy from prison. And over the course of the experiment, when prisoners observed that guards treated those who behaved well better than those who presented rebellious behavior, they started to distance themselves from each other. So the rebellious prisoners considered the good ones as collaborators, and the good prisoners blamed the rebellious ones for the punishments they received. And on the next day, another prisoner, a prisoner number 819, started having symptoms of distress. So he started crying in his cell and asked for a medical doctor. So Zimbardo even invited the priest so that the prisoner could talk to a priest, but he refused and he asked for a medical consultation. And seeing his breakdown, Zimbardo also decided to remove him from the prison. But this time, after the prisoner number 819 was leaving the prison, he was hearing the choir of other prisoners screaming that prisoner 819 did a bad thing. and this behavior was of course inspired by the guards. And on day 5 of the experiment, Philip Zimbardo arranged visitations by friends and family of the inmates. But to make the experiment even more realistic, Zimbardo made visitors wait for long periods of time, and when they got to visit the prisoners, they only had 10 minutes, and the guards, of course, watched the whole visitation. The parents who were observing their sons grew serious concerns about well-being and whether they had enough to eat. And some of the parents even warned Zimbardo that they were to contact lawyers to gain a release of their children. On the same day, so on the day 5, Zimbardo got visits from his friend Gordon Bauer, who also worked at Stanford University, and a psychologist, Christina Maslach, also the professor from Stanford University, who later became Zimbardo's wife. Professor Maslach expressed her deep concerns about well-being and the ethical side of the experiment. And she also challenged Philip Zimbardo about the lack of proper control over the situation. And she explicitly informed him that the study was quite simply moral. Also, Zimbardo's colleague Gordon Bauer was concerned about this study. However, not about the ethical issue, but he underlined the flawed methodology of the research. So he asked Zimbardo about what the independent variable of the research was. And for those of you who are not familiar with studies and the research methodology, usually when we design an experiment or a study, we choose the dependent variable, which is the outcome of the research. We also choose the independent variable, which is the predictor. So for example, in order to carry out the research on depression in students, we would have to identify two variables. Our dependent variable would be depression, or level of depression. So, and this would be the outcome. And we would also have to identify the independent variables. So for example, we would identify the level of stress as an independent variable. So we would answer the research question whether the level of depression is dependent on the level of stress. And in the same manner, if we were to conduct an experiment on the level of testosterone, on the strength of people, for example, the grip strength would be our dependent variable, and the level of testosterone would be our independent variable. So in other words, we assume that level of testosterone predicts the grip strength. And regardless of the aim of the experiment or the design or the population we carry out the research on, in all scientific research, the goal of the research should be explicitly explained and should be clear to everybody. And therefore, it is crucial to identify dependent and independent variables before we start the experiment. Well, the Stanford Prison Experiment, because this is the official name of Philip Zimbardo's research, obviously lacked clarity, and it's still extremely challenging to identify independent and dependent variables, because once you answer yourself an easy question, what exactly was Zimbardo to measure? Well, I'm sure whether you could provide an answer right away. I would have to put a lot of effort to identify what was the goal of the experiment and what were the dependent and predicting variables. And if you are not able to immediately answer what the dependent and independent variables are, it means that the experiment methodology is genuinely flawed, or at least it's quite unclear. And after being criticized by both Maslach and Bauer, and after hearing the parents' concerns about their sons, and most of all, after seeing the increasing brutality of the guards, Zimbardo decided to end the study on day 6. So on this day, the board gathered the participants, and Philip Zimbardo let them know that the experiment is now over. He also arranged something that we call debriefing, which is a procedure during which a researcher clearly explains the aim and the rationality behind the research. and assures participants they didn't do anything wrong, and they actually it was the aim of the experiment to observe what's happening with the study participants. And he also made sure that all participants are living in a state no worse than before the experiment. And now, according to Philip Zimbardo, the whole experiment demonstrated that the simulated prison and this whole research situation did not show anything about personality traits which caused the participants' behavior. In other words, according to his own interpretation, Zimbardo claimed that he did not show that people behaved in a way they behaved because of who they are, but because of the situation and the position they were put in. And this is the end of the story. It's one of the most popular experiments in the history of psychology ended after 6 days because of concerns about ethical issues, concerns about methodology, concerns about flawed identification of variables. And some people might say that Philip Zimbardo built up a prison in the basement of Stanford University without really knowing what he wanted to do. And many times this research had been criticized because of a lack of reproducibility, so it means that if any other researcher wanted to do this experiment, it would be practically impossible. And first, because of the cost of the experiment, second, because of the ethical issue, and finally, because until now, we don't really know what the aim of the research was. And there have been increasing reports suggesting that the study itself was conducted with bias aimed at achieving specific outcomes, and some researchers overseeing the experiment allegedly instructed the guards to adopt more aggressive behavior. And initially, the reported findings of the study was predicated on the belief that the guards naturally exhibited cruelty stemming from their increased authority. However, the revised findings implied that authority figures can sway individuals to conform, and this undermines the internal validity of the conclusions, as participants may have altered their behavior either due to the experimental setup or under the influence of the researchers, which is known as a Hawthorne effect. And if I were to say one positive outcome from this experiment, I'd say it's undoubtedly the emphasis it places on the significance of meticulous research methodology and thoughtful and careful experiment design.